Yes. Nixon won the election by 330 here. Because the polls closed back east, and we started getting these reports. And by 5 o'clock, everybody knew that he had won, so nobody, a lot of people didn't even go to the polls to vote.
Oh.
That was very, very bad. So maybe some of the Republicans that would have voted for Nixon would have voted for me if it had gone to the polls, mm-hmm. but there was no reason to go.
Hmm.
And then some people didn't like Nixon or McGovern, so they didn't go to the polls. So it was unfortunate.
You said something about earlier about the 79th voting for McGovern. To what do you attribute this? Why?
Because the Democrats always appeal to the poor people. They're always doing something for the poor. You know, they're the labor group.
Mm-hmm.
And all labor, you know, the blue-collar people are Democrats. Very few are Republicans. Because they say the Republicans have all the money, they're not interested in poor people. And labor exploits the poor more than any political party ever did. But that's the way the cookie crumbles. And we have more labor, blue-collar people, and more poor people, more minorities in the 79th district than any other district in the county.
Let's talk about your campaign.
What have we been talking about?
I'd like to know a little bit about, was it difficult for you in the time that you had to devote to it and the energy that it took?
Well, yes, because it's very demanding.
When did you have to give up your job and devote the full time?
In September. I quit the 1st of September, and I worked August, September and August, and, I worked September and October, 2 months in the field, I believe. Or did I leave August the 1st? No, it was September and October that I spent full time in the district. And maybe I should have, you know, taken the whole year off. But I did work during the primaries quite a bit.
Doing what type of work at this point? And what type of work do you do in the primary stage?
Well, you meet with the club groups, the Republicans, getting myself acquainted with the Republican groups, speaking at luncheons and, you know, dinners and coffees. And just, to, you know, exposing myself as much to, and then calling on the business people in the district. Just getting acquainted with the key people in the district.
How do you choose the people with whom you're going to work, like your campaign manager?
Well, you do it by osmosis. I didn't have much choice. We were begging for people that had expertise in campaigns. And unfortunately, you see, this was a presidential year too, and so they had all of the key people working in the president's campaign because they had the money.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were people up north that were running in very, you know, tight districts, and so they were putting all, even the state central committee were putting their best people someplace where they thought they had a chance to win. And as I said before, they just thought, you know, she will do the best, she'll do the best she can, but we'd rather spend it where we think that there's a chance for her to win. You know, it'd been a miracle, really, if I could have overcome the obstacles that we faced in the 79th district. They spent a great deal of money in the 76th district. They spent, you know, twice as much money. They had, campaign personnel that had worked in campaigns before. And I had amateurs. Betty Kajawa, who came to my campaign the last 2 months, had never worked in a camp as managing of a campaign. She'd worked for candidates. But it's fine if somebody else tells you what to do. You know, you go and work a precinct. But when you've got to, you know, arrange the strategy and be acute to what's happening. And I had so much trouble trying to tell them the things that were happening in the district, because In fact, many of them hadn't even been in the district. So they don't know anything about it. They never worked with blacks, they never worked with Mexicans, and they worked with very conservative whites, and had a hard time trying to get across to them that we had problems out here that should be faced, but they just couldn't see it being a problem, you know.
Are these all volunteers?
No, we paid three people on our staff, but most of the people in the office were volunteers, you know, stepping the envelopes and getting out. And we had tremendous, over 200 volunteers.
Mm.
But to get out and ring doorbells is something else. You know, these were a lot of old ladies in the senior citizen centers around there. They would come up and glad to do it. But they didn't have the, you know, the ability physically to go out in the district. And we needed people to ring doorbells. You know, I covered lots of district precincts, but I couldn't cover them all. And we just didn't have the people to do it.
Did you yourself go out?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, every day for 8 hours a day. I was ringing doorbells, walking up and down these canyons.
Mm.
And I said, oh, these feet weren't made for walking, but I'm sure walking. No, it was a vigorous campaign. I didn't take it lightly at all.
Did you have any men helping in the campaign?
Yes, we had some men helping.
Now, did they volunteer there?
We had
help,
a couple of paid people, and one was paid by the Nixon administration. They came over to help us, and another one was just paid by our staff. But that isn't, you know, like 100. If we'd had 100 volunteers, you know, like for 2 days, and paid them $2 an hour, it would have been better than what we did to even get out the vote. That last day, we had some people, volunteers in the field, but they weren't as conscientious as they would have been, you know.
How would you have liked to have changed your campaign? You know, if money had been no object, say, how would you have run your campaign then?
Well, we would have had some television time. There was no television except free. The last couple of days, we bought a few spots on the radio. But I would have had more exposure, and then we would have made it more paid workers too, because you can't get people to do anything for free anymore. And why should they?
Besides walking the precincts, how else did you get to
I went to the
home?
Churches and get to what?
Get to the people.
I went to all the churches and wrote letters to the churches, you know, the ministers. We had coffees, as I said, a walk precinct. We had a women's group that would have a coffee or some kind of cocktails or something and invite other women in so we could discuss the issues and things of that sort. But we didn't have the money to buy ads in all the papers. The last issue of Southern Cross, we put a small ad in. Chacon had a full page. He had full pages for a month, you know, for consecutive weeks in the black newspaper out here. He did the same way with the labor paper, and he just had so much money he could put ads in all of the service groups, you know, papers. I talked to lodges and fraternal groups, but we just didn't have any kind of money to compete.
How much did your campaign cost, did you say?
Well, we raised $31,000, and we owed about $400, I think, when it was over. But I said we didn't want to do any deficit spending because I didn't want a great big political debt, you know, paying off the debt. So,
about how much would a campaign have, a good campaign cost?
Well, they spent $68,000 in the 76th district, and I'm sure Peter Chacon spent more than that. I'm going to watch and get a copy of his financial statement to see what he's, how he manipulated before, you know, to hide some of his stuff. But I'm sure he spent $70,000 or more.
Mm.
Because we spent $31,000 and we didn't have the kind of money that he had, and we didn't have the ads, the ads in the paper, you know, $800, $1,000 for a page, and, you know, to run, like, in the Union and Tribune. And another thing, I talked to you about the media, too. They were not too friendly.
Oh, really? You mean the...
None of them were. None of them were. It's very interesting.
Wonder why?
Well, I don't know. Why? Except maybe they just thought that I was a woman running, just, you know, to say that I'm a woman and a woman should be in the legislature or something like that. That was their attitude.
How did they show this unfriendliness?
Just in the questions that they would ask you and the way they'd do it. You know, instead of the interviews, instead of, you know, they were always trying to make you mad about something, you know, being very provocative. And another thing, when they would quote you, they wouldn't quote you. They'd mix the questions up. Like, for instance, they asked me something about SANCOM and the revenue sharing, and there were two questions together. So the way it came out, they had the last part of SANCOM and the first part of revenue sharing, and it just sounded like nothing. But it's in quotes. You know? Sounded like an idiot.
What media?
Well, this was
did
the Tribune.
This? Did you find the TV was
the only well, whatever his name is, Jonathan Rankin. None, you know, he has an interesting name, three English names. When I went down there, he met me in such a brusque, abrupt manner that I was frightened, and I thought that we would have a little time for him to talk to me about what he was going to talk to me about. I went in there, and in 2 minutes, I was in front of the mic talking.
Do you feel he did this with everyone, or
I don't know, but I tell you what, that's KPSE. It's the one at State College.
KBS.
Gloria Penner, you probably know her.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she's the woman director or something out there. Well, I was to be interviewed, and so was Peter Chacon. And they set my time at 10 o'clock, 10:30 in the morning. And Peter Chacon called, and he wasn't going to be there until 7:30 that night. Very smart, because he wants to know what I'm saying. And don't you believe that he didn't know what I was saying. And they set up this panel. We were supposed to have the same panelists, and we were supposed to be asked the same questions. And they had a man on the panel. His last name was Rios. But his brother, Pete Rios, is a Republican. But he was also involved with the Spanish-speaking political association, and this association had already endorsed Peter Chacon.
Mm.
In fact, they had endorsed all of the Mexican-Americans that were running, Republican or Democrat. They had endorsed them, five that were running. So I said to her, well, I don't think this is quite fair to have this, his name wasn't Pete, but this Rios on the panel, because they've already decided that they're going to support Chacon, and I just don't think that it's fair that he's on this panel. Well, they were going to be very objective, and the questions that they were going to ask, they didn't tell me what questions they were going to ask at all. So I had to go in there, you know. So before we went on, though, they said something about the initiatives and the propositions, and I said, they're on the ballot, and I'm not going to discuss them. I don't think I should. There's nothing I can do about them anyway. Okay, we're not going to discuss proposition. The first thing that little bastard asked me, cut that out, what I thought about Proposition 22 and what I thought about something else. And anyway, it was a very controversial thing, issues, you know, the coastal thing. And then another one. Oh, marijuana. And so I had said, well, you know, we said before we came on the air that we would not talk about the issues. And next question, it was an issue. It's Miss Green, you're going to hate me. because I still want to know how you feel about something. To make a long story short, when Peter came on, they didn't ask him the same questions at all. And they ran this tape back to back, like we were both there.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought this was dishonest and unfair because they were thinking that he didn't have a chance for, you know, and I know the boy went and told him what the questions were. And I knew because when he talked about it, you know, the things that they asked me, I'd have to think. And you know when somebody has been, if they're thinking or whether or not you're just rattling it off. And the things that they were asking him, the few questions that they asked him, that they asked me, he just rattled it off like, you know. And I knew that he wasn't prepared anymore. Then I thought this was very unfair. And the cameraman, when I was looking at it, you know, he had the camera on the back of my head. And I don't know why he thought the back of my head was so interesting. But he just kept the camera on the back of my head. So I called her and I told her how awful I thought it was. And she said, well, she hadn't seen it and she was going to, rerun it so she could see. And she said, and I'm very sorry. And they didn't have the same palace. They changed the palace. One, at least. And they couldn't avoid that. And I said, yes, but you see, what you did was pretend to the public that this was all taped at the same time. And it really wasn't. If you had said Mr. Chacon came in at 7 o'clock, you know, but they ran it back to back. And she said, and I will check to see the camera, because I didn't imagine why he was, focusing the cameras on the back of your head. And I said, I don't know either, but I said it stayed on there, you know, like maybe 60 minutes or something like that, a few seconds anyway. But that was the worst. They were very kind at Channel 10. Very, very helpful, Channel 10. They call you in and they sit down with an interview that is not taped, you know. They just sit down and they talk to you, and then they can see your reaction on the camera. I couldn't see it, but on the screen. But the girl that was with me saw it, and the interviewer could see how I was reacting, and he would tell me, you know, how to do and not to wear certain kinds of jewelry and to look in the camera rather than at the person, because the people are interested in seeing what you look like rather than seeing the side of your face.
Well, why do you think they acted like that up at State? Do you think that
discrimination
because you were a woman or because you were a black?
Well, I think Glory Pinner is a Mexican, and I think she was just trying to show Peter Chacon and a better light, that's all. And then she did.
How much did you say your campaign cost?
$31,000.
And how did you generate this money?
Through funds. We raised money. We had a couple of fundraisers, and then people just sent in $2, $5, $10, $25. We didn't have anyone that gave us more than $500.
Was this unsolicited funds?
Oh, no, they were solicited. We sent out letters to, we have a campaign committee and campaign a finance chairman, and they sent out letters to Republicans and other interested people in the community.
This is part of your campaign process.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Had you worked in campaigns before yourself?
Yes, I've run doorbells and stuffed envelopes for candidates. I supported Pete Wilson and did some precinct work for him.
Did you find this experience helpful in your own campaign?
Not necessarily.
Why?
Not necessarily. Well, because I'm selling myself, and that's different than selling somebody else. If I ring a doorbell, I would say, I'm Ruth Green, and I'm a candidate for the 79th Assembly District, and I'd like to have you support me. You know, and if they want to talk about something, I'd spend a little time. But you feel so much better talking about someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about you in a very positive, forceful way, and you're embarrassed talking about yourself that way. Mm-hmm. I felt it, anyway.
How do you select the issues that you're going to focus on?
Well, you have to think about the district and the needs of the district and check to see what the incumbent has done.
Does your campaign manager help you in this?
They should. But first, at that time, we didn't have a campaign manager. I had to do it myself.
Did you have anyone at all to fall back on?
Yes, we had two people that came into the campaign quite early, a girl and a boy, and they had worked in other campaigns, but not as really as experts. They'd just been like precinct workers or answering the telephones or doing something like that. One of the girls had worked, with the assembly. She was one of the people that they select in college to, and she had worked up there for years, so she knew quite a bit about the legislature, but nothing about running a campaign. We did some interesting things. I don't know whether I have any literature in the house or not, but I can show you some of the. There may be some. No, I don't think that we have any pieces of literature now. Those are just press releases. Excuse me.
Okay.
I have other literature out in the back that I can't get to because of the rain. But this is one of the things we put out. And this was the first thing we had, filled with green, with a traffic signal.
Now, who designs these brochures?
Well, we had someone in public relations. We paid for that. Who did that? Frampton, I think. This was one of our bumper stickers. And the first one was Go With Green. These were the ones we used in the end.
They capitalized on your name.
Yeah. We use this one. You can take these with you if you want.
Oh, thank you.
And this one, too. And these are some matches we have.
I see you're pictured here with Pete Wilson.
That's the worst looking picture I ever took in my life. I'm not photogenic though, really.
I think this is.
Well, this is a very good picture, but if you just like this one, and with there's one with the kids. I'm reading to some children, and I don't know, maybe it's in that one. I think this had the worst pictures of any. It's a bad picture, and the other one is too.
Like,
you know, no, I know. Another thing, I couldn't, convince them that don't put any pictures like that in. Let's take another one, or let's doctor this one up, or something. You know, and they went on in their merry way,
Was the public relations?
My manager, the public relations guy did the picture, and he thought, this is a good picture. And I said, I don't like that picture. It's good for the kids, but it's not. Let's take, some of the puffs out in the year, People aren't going to pass it. Everybody else is trying to make their candidate look good. Oh, God, what a mess. How's your sherry?
Fine.
Okay, I got a cigarette. Do you mind?
No, that's. What would you say you enjoyed least about campaigning?
Making speeches.
Were you called upon to do this?
Oh yes, yes, very much. So all of the Republican groups, all of the Federated Women's Clubs, at the luncheons and teas and what have you, and the men were the same, and then the. Service clubs.
How do you get on their programs?
They just call you and ask you. They're real happy to hear what the candidates have to say.
Did you always let them have a question and answer period?
Yes.
How did you feel this?
Well, okay, because people were interested in a lot of different things, and I was, prepared to talk about the issues that were facing people, and I never felt uncomfortable about. I didn't think that they were, being ugly or.
Did you feel any
animosity.
Antagonism.
No. Mm-mm. Not toward me, but toward government, you know. They were very much against some of the things that Nixon had done and some of the things that Reagan had done. And you find yourself campaigning for yourself, but with also you're campaigning against some of the things that the party has done. You know, I had to account for some of the things that Reagan had done, and I'd be attacked about. Well, for instance, the federal government increased the Social Security benefits 20%. Well, you see, Nixon had wanted less or something, and finally they passed 20%. Well, Nixon didn't want us to have this. And then, of course, in California, the legislators had already voted to deduct everything over $12 as outside income. So this 20% was considered outside income for Californians, and this was deducted, all the $12 of this 20% increase. And of course they were blaming Reagan for it and not the legislators, and I kept telling them, Reagan doesn't pass any laws. He vetoes them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The legislators voted this. He signed the law. But you should blame your legislators too to get that across to them. Old Reagan. It was just all old Reagan, you know. And of course then Nixon came out with the quota. He was doing away with quotas. Well, this really upset minorities, because if you say that you have to have so many, at least five people get in, we'll say, if you know, if that's the quota. But if you don't have any quotas, nobody gets in.
Mm.
So he came out being pressured by these Jews, because they've always been against quotas, the quota system. You can remember working with Jews when the NAACP, because they've been very active in the NAACP. You know, through the years. Oh, yes, we've had. Spengar was a Jew, and I think he probably was one of our longest national presidents for a long time. So, he turned a lot of blacks and Mexicans and ethnic groups off by saying that, you know, he was against quotas system. He was going to do away with quotas.
Now, this so is quotas in what?
Employment.
I see. Like the affirmative action?
Well, this is what they started, the affirmative action, you know, to see that the minorities got employed. But there was I don't know whether it was in the law or just a policy that, you know, if you had 10% Negroes in the community, then you should have,
mm-hmm.
you know, so many Negroes employed.
Right. You mentioned Reagan a little while ago. What are your feelings on Reagan?
Well, he is ultra conservative. I don't know what he's going to do this last year. He has mellowed, his, you know, in some instances, but I think that his thinking is certainly conservative, but what he has done is just like Nixon. They appointed more blacks to jobs, gave them jobs, than any Democrat ever did. And this is what I like about them, that they give you jobs and not relief.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but many Negroes couldn't see that.
You support him then in his...
Not in all the things that he does. I think he's done some good things for California, but I don't, you know, like his conservative attitude about, not only about blacks, and just other things, that he is very, very conservative and narrow in.
I'd like to just ask you a few questions about your opinions of the women's movement today. You mentioned a little while ago that you don't consider yourself a woman liberationist, I believe.
What a woman's liber.
What is your reaction to the women's movement?
Of course, being a minority, I have worked all my life you know, for equal rights,
mm-hmm.
and not only for women, but for everybody
mm-hmm.
else. And this was no new effort for me. I feel that women should have equal opportunities in employment and other areas, but I don't see going to the extreme that they have gone to. I'm still a woman, and there's certain things that I cannot do that a man can do. I don't want to drive a truck, and I don't want to do all of those things. And if they want to do it, then fine, but I don't think that they should impose this as a movement for all women.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I'd ever be active in the group for that reason, because I'm not that aggressive.
Do you feel that you have benefited in any way from the movement at all?
Mm-mm. They haven't helped me any.
Do you feel that you possibly might have helped the women's status?
Well, I think anything that we do that's positive, you know, helps someone. And I think if men see women in various fields that are capable, that it helps. But I just don't like their technique, maybe I should say, in bringing about this great, great freedom.
How widespread do you think this movement really is?
Well, I think that it's pretty widespread. There are a lot of young people, young women, who are more active in the movement than they are, you know, middle-aged and older women. And I think that they're going to press right on until they have just one toilet for for men and women and both alike. You take yours and I'll take mine.
Do you think there are some who actually want to go that far?
Oh, yes, definitely. They don't see any reason why a woman should be treated any differently than a man in any area. And, of course, we are different. We were created different.
How do you think men and women do differ in
other than biological?
Right. Than the obvious. Do you think they make different decisions, say, or come to a decision-making process in a different manner?
I think they do. Because I think maybe women are inclined to let emotion guide their thinking. And I won't say all women, but I think women as a rule, in general, react that way.
How do you think this might affect their effectiveness then as a... say a congressman or a
no, I think that a woman can be just as good a congressman or doctor or lawyer as anyone else, because we do have women who think clearly and respond that way and react that way. But I do think that they have a deeper sense of feeling than men, because I think men are rather callous in a way. So I think women probably would make better legislators, because they are concerned with family,
mm-hmm.
and men aren't. You know, they're concerned with making the money and providing, but they really are not concerned with the basic issues of family living.
Mm-hmm.
And I think women would make better legislators. You run your kitchen, your budget, you know, and you think in terms of, well, how far can I make this dollar go? And the man is only interested in the dollars. He doesn't care how far they go.
Right. What changes do you think have come about for women in the past 10 years?
Oh, tremendous changes. Women are just getting employed and considered you know, just like minorities. Never thought about women. The women never thought that they were minorities either until they found out that they were. And they're discriminated against as much as minorities are. And I think this is what's helped the situation, because women now are becoming more interested in my having a better chance in life, because they can see what it means to be discriminated against.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it has increased their concerns for others.
Do you think that there is a difference between the attitude of a black man and a white man about women, or do they think of women on the same? I'm not phrasing that very well. You know what I mean?
I don't. I think that the black male is more accustomed to the black woman taking leadership or taking responsibility because they have been discriminated so much, you know, against him. And maybe the woman could get the job where he couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that he appreciates this situation, and I think he resents the black woman, you know, because of this. And I think this is why... Mm-hmm. When he gets an opportunity that he always, you know, not always, but he grabs another racial group. Mostly he likes to show off with white women to show the white man, you know, that he has achieved in some. He may mm-hmm. not have been able to be a breadwinner, you know, and a great guy in his own home, but at least I can take your woman from you. And this upsets black women to no end.
Do you think black women are striving for the same thing as the white woman is then?
Well, I don't think in the same way. I think black women are more concerned with, you know, having equal opportunity.
More the basics.
More the basics. I don't think that she's trying to show that because I'm a woman that I should have this. I think that they're interested in I'm a human being and I should have the same rights as everybody else. I don't think they have this drive. And you don't find many black women in the liberation movement.
Oh.
Very few. Mm-mm. You know, because they've always been out there working and taking care of their families and taking responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's no big deal.
Nothing new for
Nothing
them.
New.
What discrimination have you felt as a woman or as a black in, say, school? Did you ever...
No, I didn't go to any integrated schools. I went to segregated schools.
So you wouldn't have that problem?
Except, you know, in postgraduate.
Was it co-ed?
Yes.
Did you find any discrimination there in college, say, against a woman?
Not necessarily.
In any of the work that you've ever done?
No, because I went into social work and then more women in social
field.
Work. I think I would have it if I was invading a male
mm-hmm.
career atmosphere.
How do you feel about the men invading the social service field? Seems to me.
Well, we always thought that they were kind of feminine, but but we need men in social service fields because you deal with human lives, and there are men, boys involved, and I think they don't all react to women, and I think that that's a good place for them if they're inclined to that. But it's not a masculine role. You don't think in terms of, we've got a lot of male social workers. But.
Do you think the trend is towards more men into the social service?
I said we do have them. I don't think the trend is. Not necessarily, because we have a lot of men in social services and in the correctional field, too. I really don't know. We always thought that, you know, social work is for women because they started out as being, you know, do-gooders with baskets of fruit, taking it to the sick and taking it to the poor. It became more professional, and some of our greatest reforms have been instituted by men.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a place.
I'd like to just ask you a few more things about your future plans now. Are you planning to run for another office?
No, never.
Never?
Never.
Oh, why is this?
Well, I'm just not equipped emotionally to be a politician. And I'd rather, you know, spend the rest of my life doing something that's more constructive.
Even though the odds the next time weren't so much against you, you still...
I don't think I'd run again. The second place, I'm too old to run again, you know, because they're looking for youth, and I think this is the trend. And I really don't have any ambition to be a legislator or to hold any public office.
How would you say your campaign for this office affected you? Are you a different person now because of it?
I don't think so. Well, maybe I can, you know, evaluate this at a later time. It was a tremendous experience for me. It probably helped me to think on my feet or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it has changed my personality any. It may have.
Do you think you gained anything from it?
Oh, yes. Yes. The experience of just meeting people and talking to people and, you know, being involved.
Mm-hmm.
It was a growth experience, you know, for the better.
Could you just evaluate your campaign in a few words, like...
We lost.
Things you wish you had done differently?
Yes. I wish we had started out sooner. I wish we had had proper management and guidance. I wish we had spent our energies in another direction.
For instance?
Well, I would have liked to have had a real keen person, a black person, that was respected and had some leadership ability to conduct the campaign in the black community, which we didn't do. We had some promises, but they never came through.
Mm-hmm.
So we needed people to be able to go into the pool halls and, mm-hmm. you know, go into the bars and men in the barbershops where men sit around and chit-chat. And we didn't have that,
mm-hmm.
you see. And I think that would have been very, very helpful. So... And we just didn't have the leadership that we needed. And, of course, we didn't have the money.
Well, thank you very much. Would you like to say anything that I haven't asked you?
No, I'll probably think of several after you leave. If I do, do you mind if I...
No, please do.
Okay.
Please call me.
I'll think about some things. So they have no idea, you know, what you wanted
right.
to know. And you probably listen back and see.
Mm-hmm.
Want to ask me other questions too, so feel free to call me.
All right, fine. Well, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.